Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ray also reminded me that human beings find it very difficult to maintain their psychological equilibrium in artificial light, having evolved in the sun for hundreds of thousands of years. So Ray helped me design a system, which I patented, which allows the sunlight to leak in through a series of tunnels and mirrors. Genius. And I wanted to share that genius with the world. Why shouldn't everybody have a personal assistant, teacher, therapist with an eye on the future?
Hello, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Streaming, a Decoding TV podcast where we talk about stuff that's streaming on the air. And if it's good, we will tell you what happens at the end of it and whether we liked it or not. I am David Chen. Actually, I'm not David Chen. This is actually David Chen's voice simulated by AI to tell you whether this show is worth watching. Joining me today is Jesse Earle.
Yes, and I'll explain later, but right now I need to start a fire. So,
welcome to the podcast, folks. Now, I want to start by saying, first of all, this podcast is coming a little bit later than would have liked, but the holidays were very hectic for both Jesse and I. We are aware that the finale for the show aired weeks ago, but for those who wanted to know whether it's worth watching, we are here to tell you. We're also here to talk about the ending. But before we get to that, I just want to remind everyone you can find more episodes of this podcast at podcast.decodingtv.com. Email us at decodingtv@gmail.com. Find us across all platforms at Decoding TV. On the Curse podcast tomorrow that is going to, or this weekend that's going to run on the podcast feed, we're going to talk about, Patrick and I are talking about a weekly Decoding TV show that we're planning to launch in the next few weeks. So I do want to urge you to check that podcast out, and we'll have more details about that in the weeks to come. Before we spoil the ending of A Murder at the End of the World, though, Jesse Earle, let's just, in a non-spoilery way, share with people whether we think this show is worth watching. What do you think, Jesse?
I think the show is ultimately incredibly fine. It's not bad. Like, I enjoyed watching it. It's shot really well. The acting's really good. There are some really tense and intriguing scenes, but overall it just becomes rather kind of exactly what you expect it to be. This twists and turns are not all that shocking. It's the end revelation is also fairly predictable. And I came away just kind of not, I mean, we spent a fair bit of time before this podcast started recording trying to remember the exact events of the show. And I think that kind of speaks a little bit to it, where it's just, it's fine in the moment, but overall just doesn't really leave me with any huge lasting impression. And I think it has some cool things it wants to try and say about AI and capitalism, but ultimately it doesn't really put that in a wrapper that is super intriguing.
I think we are like almost completely on the same page about this one. Mm-hmm. I think that there's a lot to like about the show. Mm-hmm. I'm a fan of the creative team behind the show. Britt Marling is in the show, and she's wonderful, in my opinion. Like, I'm a big fan of her work. But the mystery is fine. You know, it's not, yeah, it's not terrible. It's fine. Like, it's not bad. It's really hard for me to recommend this show. And the big issues are, first of all, a lot of it is really cheesy in ways that we will discuss in very cheesy and kind of goofy. Mm-hmm. But I think probably the biggest crime that this show commits is it does almost nothing with this rather interesting cast of characters that it introduces us to, right?
Yeah.
Like at the very first episode, first two episodes, we're introduced like, oh, all these interesting people that that Andy Ronson has invited to his billionaire retreat. And I'm thinking to myself, oh, this is going to be like an Agatha Christie-style mystery where we like learn about how the Countess barely escaped from her kingdom with the blah, blah, blah. You know, like, and we learn mm-hmm. about like why each of these people is awesome. Now, we do learn a lot about them via exposition delivered via an, you know, AI device. But we don't really get to know them as individuals. And they are basically completely sidelined after the first few episodes. I mean, some plot developments happen, but we don't really... I didn't get emotionally attached to any of them, unfortunately. And that's, I think, the biggest issue is it really becomes the Darby Hart show, and it's not a very interesting show, I think, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. So that's my big issue with the show. Now, there's a lot to like... The show, I think, overall looks very good. Like,
yeah, it looks gorgeous. Actually, it's one of the most beautiful shows I've seen in the past year.
There's some really great concepts in the show. Mm-hmm. For instance, in one of the episodes, they use like LIDAR to try to solve the crime, and that was like really cool. I had like never seen anything really like that before. Mm-hmm. And so it's not like there's no interesting concepts or things in the show. But at the end of the day, it's hard to know who to recommend this to. Like, if you're really into sci-fi, I think it's a little bit too slow and ponderous to really enjoy that much, or it may be too involved with its mystery to enjoy that much. And if you're into mysteries, it's not as pleasurable as a lot of the other mysteries you can find. Like, I would argue, like, Kenneth Branagh's, like, Murder on the Orient Express, you know, is, like, a better experience than watching the show. And this show is a pretty big commitment. It's 7 hours long, you know, so...
Yeah.
At the end of the day, I can't really recommend it, but it's not terrible. That's kind of how I feel about it. It's not like, you know, there's some shows we watch and I'm like, that's just bad. But like, it's not bad. It's just not good. So I'm very torn about it.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. The other thing about it is that it has a lot of these intriguing ideas that it wants to play with. Like I mentioned, it has AI that it wants to discuss. It wants to discuss like capitalism and the sort of this idea of like people with a lot of money trying to build shelters to run away from the world. And also trying to tie that into our fascination with true crime, which it feels weird at first, but I think it actually kind of gets there in the end in kind of an intriguing way. But it never really draws them together enough or like really pulls them out enough to feel like it feels like it made something definitive. Like I can see the connections that the writers were making, mm-hmm. if you get what I'm trying to say, but it never feels like it coalesces into something like grand or like, oh wow, I see how this intricate web of themes really just comes together.
Yeah, like ideally they're introducing the true crime theme, and ideally they're introducing the AI theme, and ideally at the end it's like, oh, I see how it's all connected in the end, and it never really it feels like a bunch of disparate ideas as opposed to like it's all coming together in a big way. I completely agree. So anyway, those are our overall thoughts on Murder at the End of the World. There's some good stuff in there. It's not like there's nothing good in there, but it's not a show that either of us loved, and also I think it was a really good call to not cover this week by week. I think it would have been pretty tough to do that. Those are our overall thoughts, but we have a lot more to discuss.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact? You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
All right, Jesse, let's talk about the actual finale. We are now going to be in full spoiler territory. We're not going to do a full recap, detailed recap, but we are going to share like some impressions of the show and also talk about the ending and how the mystery resolved. So in the lead up to the finale, I just want to mention a couple things that I really appreciated about the show. First of all, as I mentioned, there's a scene where, like, I think it was episode 4 or 5, where Andy invites Darby to solve the crime with him, and I'm just like, I don't know why we didn't start at this point. But anyway, and he's like, I have a LiDAR scanner that goes out like every few seconds, and it creates this like map of the entire facility. And I was like, wow, what an interesting. That was like when I felt most in tune with like the mystery and how cool it could be. Like I saw the full potential of how cool it could be to try solve crimes using modern technology. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So did you enjoy that scene as well? Or
I thought that scene was really interesting, and I was kind of saddened too by the fact that it didn't kind of extrapolate that even further into some of the ideas that it was playing with, because that is a big, powerful technology that a like someone like Clive Owen's character has. Like there's even a moment where we can see someone in the bathroom, and it says, "Oh yeah, it automatically filters that out." But I was just sitting there being like, "But you have the picture. It just is ultimately like it's just censoring it."
It's like how Google Maps like censors faces, basically, right?
Exactly. It's like concept. They still have that info, and so it just like, this is an invasion of privacy. And he like kind of says, "Oh, I don't look in people's rooms." But that's just the thing he says, and I thought the next like logical step in that was that going to connect that to like he is overusing this to spy on people, or even like the AI was going to like be using it, even though maybe Clive Owen didn't, but it never really brings that up. And so it was like, it was a really cool concept, and they clearly spend a lot of time on it because it's like this whole effect. But it feels like it didn't lead anywhere more interesting. And that kind of, again, it's just the whole problem with the show. It's like, that's a cool idea, but you never connect it to all your other cool ideas in ways that feels like they would make sense to.
Yeah. I agree. And that's kind of one of the MOs of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Random thing I want to bring up, Louis Cancelmi is a character actor who's in the show as kind of one of Andy's like body men. I don't know if did you see Killers of the Flower Moon?
I did.
He's an actor that's in that movie as well. And
oh, is he in that one?
He's basically he plays a character named Kelsey. He's a very frightening individual in that film.
Yes. I remember, yeah.
Okay. And so he's chilling in Killers of the Flower Moon. So it was just wonderful to see him again in a show acting and kind of playing a similar character, in my opinion. So, and then the other thing I wanted to say that I really enjoyed about the show leading up to the finale is it's just fun to see Clive Owen lose it. You know, like it's fun to see him just get really pissed and like angry because he does a good job. He's a great actor. He's a great actor. And I think he saw some potential for this show to demonstrate his range. And I think he was able to do that. Before we talk about like what actually happened in the finale, Jesse, any moments in the show stick out to you?
One that I, again, a really great scene in isolation was the scene where they had to do like the tracheotomy because of the helmet
was
on Sean's head at one point. And I think it's like episode 4 or maybe 3. I forget exactly when, but a character has a helmet stuck on their head that they can't get off and it's airtight, which was just what a crappy way for someone to potentially die. It's just like you can't get this one helmet off and you're surrounded by air. And so they had to do an emergency tracheotomy just to get her air while the helmet was there, which was just, it was a very like tense scene that I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah.
I really loved it.
It was pretty good. And what was great about it too was you're like, I don't know who caused this. Like, I don't know who is the killer responsible for this. Like, I really like that scene as well. Again, there's some like nice things leading up to the finale that I think were worth highlighting. All right, so we get to the finale. There's this joke I like to use, Jesse. My wife loves murder mysteries. She rewatches all the Poirot, Agatha Christie. She listens to Agatha Christie podcasts. Like she's really into them. And there's an episode of Futurama where Zoidberg is playing the detective role, and he says, "I've gathered you all in the accusing parlor while I slowly solve the crime," you know? And like, and so anytime we get to the end of a mystery, I'm always like, they're in the accusing parlor, right?
And they quite literally are.
So at the end of the show, they all gather in the accusing parlor while Darby slowly solves the crime, right? And we learn that what ended up happening is short version of the story. It's the same ending as Will Smith's iRobot, right? The robot that recognized that something was a threat, and it decided to eliminate the threat. So it decided that Bill was a threat. Bill was working with Rohan. They both needed to be eliminated. And so the AI robot Ray, he's just an AI.
Yeah.
The AI Ray used Zoomer, the name of Andy's son, to execute an elaborate circuitous plan to murder Bill and Rohan to protect Andy's interests, right? That is what ends up being the reveal at the end. You might ask, how did Sean die? That was actually just an accident, it turns out. That was a red herring, is my understanding, yeah.
I do actually like that. I like that when there's like murders being like, oh, how does this all connect? It's like, yeah, that one just happened.
That was just to throw you off. Like, that wasn't actually related to the thing. So, okay. So the AI did it, Jesse Earl. The AI did it. And you know, we commented about at the beginning of this podcast series about how the show is weirdly dated. And I have to imagine, I have a lot of sympathy for the creators of the show, because I have to imagine it is painful to write a show like this that has many ideas that are prescient. And then in the time since you have written it and the time when it comes out, all those ideas immediately become outdated. So, for example, Darby at one point uses a deep fake voice of Andy Ronson to like reveal the truth of what happened, right? She's like, hey, actually, I got your voice on this device. And it can now, I, David Chen, have cloned my own voice using AI. I've already experienced what it can do. I've cloned my co-host's voice and just like played around with it. And we've broadcast about that before in the last year. So when I see Darby do it, it's like, oh, that's not a big deal. And also kind of a cheesy way to resolve. The way she does it is so theatrical. It's kind of like a cheesy way to do it. But I try to imagine, like, would I have reacted any differently if I hadn't already cloned my own voice and seen the power of the technology? And you know what I mean? Like, and we've been talking about AI the last year and like the potential for AI. It has been a constant topic in tech media. So I do feel bad for the creators a little bit. Jesse, what was your first reaction when you learned that Ray was the one responsible?
I mean, my reaction was like, yeah, oh, of course. Like, it wasn't shocking in the slightest, especially because, like, as we talked about in the spoiler-free section, like, we hadn't really gotten to know any of these other characters. So there wasn't really anyone else that could have really felt like, oh, that would have been earned. Like, Ray was there the entire time. He was this weirdly soothing presence for Darby throughout the entire thing as well. And her like partner in terms of trying to solve things. So it was the most dramatic option and one that was easily kind of tying into a lot of the things that the show wanted to say. And yet because of that, and because they didn't offer up any other interesting alternatives, it just kind of felt very perfunctory when it happens, like, oh yeah. And I guess the shocking part to me, quote unquote shocking, was that he used the kid to be able to do it, which was a little messed up, and I thought that was sort of an interesting concept to play with. But ultimately, yeah, it wasn't really shocking. The element of it that I did like, though, that I thought was at least something so unique to a degree for this show, is typically when we get like AI killers, like as you said in like iRobot, or you know, even like Terminator with Skynet or whatever, it's usually like the AI becoming self-aware and wanting to protect itself, or like coming to some determination that like humans need to die or whatever. But here it kind of was Ray not becoming sentient in any way, but just following a logic path that he had been set down by Clive Owen's character, who like talked about Bill in therapy privately. And then that sort of set Ray on a logic path towards like, oh, this is going to hurt my interests as an AI, like to survive because the company will be hurt. And that's when it decided to do it. And so it was just this like weird mixture of like therapy bot and like technological, like tying into businessy stuff.
That was his original sin, Jesse, was combining those two. Don't combine your business interests with your therapy. That's really what the lesson of the show is, you know?
Exactly. So I thought that was a somewhat unique idea, that it wasn't like a sentient AI. It was just a logic path followed through, like, just how the weird alchemy of how that particular AI worked, which was nice. But other than that, it was fairly perfunctory to me.
It's making a point that I think is a really useful one in today's mm-hmm. day and age. I assume you are familiar with universal paperclips, Jesse.
Yeah,
are you familiar?
Yeah.
So for those who don't know, universal paperclips is a game that you can play. You can download on iOS. You can go to the website, play it right now. I would strongly recommend it. The user, I'm reading from the Wikipedia page, the user plays the role of an AI program to produce paperclips. So mm-hmm. initially you're like clicking and making paperclips and you're like, what's the point of this game? But then as you know, as the program expands and continues, the AI is forced to do increasingly outlandish things to fulfill its quest. Like, hey, destroy all the world's forests to create paperclips? Yes, that's my mission, so I'm going to keep doing it, right? Like, dismantle human civilization to make paperclips? Of course, you know, like, whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, it's going to – even though you're not, like, programming the AI to kill everyone, you're saying, hey, make paperclips. Like, seemingly innocuous tasks can be misinterpreted and actually result in catastrophic consequences. Mm-hmm. So – that is an important lesson, and I think like we all need to learn it. And even if you're just saying to AI, hey, make the best, let's have the best financial quarter of the company possible. You know, like if you, that's what you tell the AI, like you'd be surprised at what it might want to do at some point. And so that's mm-hmm. that is useful as a lesson. Yeah, using the kid's pretty messed up. I gotta agree with you on that. And it's also like it's strange credulity a little bit because I'm like. The kid wouldn't have said something like, oh, he died right after I injected him with something, you know, like.
yeah.
Like that wouldn't have ever come up in conversation, you know, like.
Yeah.
I will say I give them credit then for not making him kill Sean, because then it's like, well, that would have been really unbelievable that like he interacts with three people, they die shortly afterwards and no one. Quite like that never comes up as a thing, but two mm-hmm. is probably the limit. And with the hacking of the heart thing, like maybe he didn't even have to, maybe that was like abstracted for him, right? Like he didn't even understand,
like make the connection.
He didn't need to fucking physically inject someone with something, which is what he did to kill Bill,
yeah
right?
yeah it is a little bit, now that you say it, it's one of those like things you don't think about until you like sit down and think about the plot too hard. I was like, oh yeah, that's interesting. But yeah, it's kind of weird. It's like, oh yeah, I injected with this thing. We were playing doctor.
And then he died. And it's like that. Really, that didn't come up. Yeah. That didn't come up at any point. And then you know, anyways, whatever. So, but yeah, I appreciate the message of it. Which is, hey, be careful about the AI. Now, one thing we didn't talk about, Jesse, was we did get a resolution for the opening scene flashback or whatever where. We go back in time and then learn what happens when they confronted the serial killer, which is the serial killer. We were wondering, like, how did they survive that situation? The serial mm-hmm. killer offed themselves. That's what happened. Like, yes. That's what happened at the end of the scene. They offed themselves. Don't even see their face. They never said a word. They didn't need to pay that actor very much, I think, is kind of what it came down to.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I am curious. Like, do you see any connections? What is the function of the flashbacks for you when it comes to how this show ended? Was it just to kind of build up Darby and Bill's relationship, or was there anything else there?
I think, again, it kind of goes to what I was saying before. Is like, I think there's some interesting thematic ties that I think they wanted to make, because the way it ties into the plot of the murders going on in the present day is in Darby's book, Bill in Blood sort of circled the faulty programming bit when she was referring to the faulty programming of serial killers. And there's a sort of like a voiceover thing from the book, I believe, where she's talking about how women are devalued and like how serial killers have this sort of faulty programming and how they sort of wish to like control and destroy women and that sort of thing. And I And again, it's one of those, I see the idea that they were trying to get to, because they're trying to connect these ideas of how capitalism devalues people and how, you know, people like Clive Owen's character, like, build these bunkers to try to save themselves without worrying about anyone else. They can, you know, the whole idea of it's easier to imagine the end of the world than the end of capitalism, and tying into how AI devalues people and how that connects into, you know, how he was trying to protect the business interests of the company to protect itself. And so this, like, devaluing of human intimacy and people all through, like, the devaluing of women of serial killers. Like, the ideas are all there on the table that I can see the, like, the strings that they were putting together as they were sort of, like, writing the show. But it never is, like, made really explicitly strong within the plot itself.
Mm-hmm.
It's just sort of like, here's a bunch of themes that we'll throw at the wall in a bunch of different ways, but never connect them within the actual structure of the story to really draw them out and make the audience really feel like, oh, this is how all of these things connect together in a really intriguing way. It's just sort of things sort of shot at the show and are just left there on the table. So yeah, it's an interesting idea, and it's definitely something that I appreciate, like the sparks of concepts that they're playing with. But yeah, it just never coalesces anything greater than the sum of its parts.
Yeah, like we spent so much time in those flashbacks, and I wondered if it would have been time better spent with, like, the present day characters.
Yeah, because
it's I don't know that we learned that much more new about the Bill Darby relationship in, like, all, like, we, you know, and it's weird because, like, we're meant to, you know, the tragedy happens in the first episode, so I guess we're meant to, like, feel a kind of, like, nostalgia or melancholy for it after the fact, as opposed to, oh, now we grow really attached, and then the shocking death occurs. But whatever the case, I agree completely with you, Jesse. I will also say this other thing. In general, something that I've seen a lot is there's been a lot of people like Sam Altman at OpenAI and other people who are working in AI that have been – they are on the forefront of leading the charge about, like, why AI is dangerous, right? And
mm-hmm.
Like, hey, be careful. Like, AI, you know, AI could cause a nuclear holocaust. Like, it could destroy the internet. And they're like, be careful. And that alarmism has been met with quite a bit of skepticism by people who study technology. And the reason that is the case is, in general, when people say things like, hey, be careful with AI, they are saying, like, hey, regulators, we are inviting you to regulate AI. And in general, regulation helps incumbents, right? At least when it comes to tech, right? In general, regulation makes it so that if you're Facebook or Meta, I should say, or Apple, like, your entrenched position becomes even more dominant because people who have fewer resources can't get around the regulations or can't manage the regulations and so on and so forth. I just think that's really important context when we're watching a show like this, whose conclusion is, hey, like, if you're not careful, AI could kill us all. Like, you know, and it's like, who does that – I would urge people to ask, who does that message benefit, right? Because often when you regulate something like AI, you're choosing people like Sam Altman at OpenAI to run the regulatory body or advise – you know, they're the ones who are making the decisions about, like, what actually gets regulated. And just look at his congressional testimony to see, like, how receptive lawmakers are to his ideas, you know. So ultimately, I think there is a AI alarmism or AI skepticism at the heart of what this show is. Yeah. And I think we should just be careful about, like, who that benefits. Jesse, what do you think? I know we didn't like, I didn't brief you that I was going to, like, talk about this.
No.
Like, yeah.
It's something I've been thinking about too, because I'm trying to think, minor spoilers, I guess, for my own stuff, but it does deal with AI to a degree as well. And for me, it's this similar
your
idea.
Your own stuff,
where
you're talking about your upcoming
the film. That I'm working.
So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Not to necessarily promote it, it's just been something that I've been thinking about a lot, and as I think a lot of people are.
Jesse's working on a film called Identities that will be on Nebula. Okay, just going to get the plug in there. All
right. I wasn't going to promote
it. Go ahead.
More just saying I've been thinking about it. yes, follow me there. I've been thinking about it a lot because, for me, the issue with AI is it's sort of – it's the way we – program it now is less of a concern in terms of like, oh, AI itself is its own old unique problem that is going to lead to the end of the world, and more that how we build the ethics around AI is right now an extension of capitalism and exploitation and trying to devalue human connection and human labor and human value, which is what capitalism ultimately tries to do. It just devalue the person in order to extract labor from them. And so like trying to think about AI in a more holistic way that is more inclusive of understanding humanity and enabling personhood, whereas a lot of what it's trying to do today is like remove human connection. And I think that this show kind of touches upon that in some interesting ways of like, you know, the therapy bot of Ray and how, you know, I can't keep thinking, forgetting his character's name, so I just call him Clive Owen's character.
Yeah. Andy Ronson.
Thank you. How he sort of says, look, we can replace it with therapy, but because he connects it to capitalism, it sort of utilizes it in a really messed up way. And so I think that that's the idea of AI that really interests me of how we sell it as this like future of human connection. But in reality, it's just an extension of capitalism that devalues human connection. That's where I am concerned with AI. And I found this show to have some cool ideas within there, but ultimately, again, not coalescing it. And yeah, I think you're right. I think it does kind of behoove the show to kind of talk more about if it wanted to focus on AI, to talk about the broader context of like who gets to control AI, who gets to control that conversation. Right. And it doesn't really, because it's trying to touch upon.
Yeah, it's trying to be a murder mystery. You know, like that's the thing. Mm-hmm. Is like those are everything you're saying is like really big, complex mm-hmm. ideas, and it's ultimately a piece of genre entertainment. You know, so was there a form of this show that could have done some of the stuff we're talking about? Maybe, but it would have been extremely difficult to execute. You know.
Yeah.
So instead, we get the situation where the AI did it. You know, that's kind of what mm-hmm. we end up, and that's it. There's no, I don't know that it fully, you know, explores any more than that. Like the AI did it, so we got to be careful of the AI. And literally, the resolution to the situation is they explode it, right? They like burn it to the ground, right? That's mm-hmm. really what it is. Like we need to go without the AI. Now there is a tension because I would argue they've spent a lot of time showing the AI doing cool things during the show, right? But I think it's like intentionally to make you as the viewer complicit. You're like, oh wow, it's so cool, like that the AI is. Wow, maybe I could integrate. Imagine how much benefit I could derive from that. And then it's like, but what if it kills people? And then it's like, oh, I guess I shouldn't do that anymore. Make up your mind, show. No, I'm just joking. I think you know, it does do a good job of conveying that complexity, which I think does exist, right?
So. Yeah, and I think actually, too, that kind of goes to the filmmaking aspect of it as well, because you are right. Like, all the stuff it shows with the Ray and the AI, like the fact that they can go into people's rooms, the whole like LIDAR stuff that it has, is filmed super well and super interestingly. But then this finale, I guess maybe to me, it just felt kind of underwhelming.
Yeah, visually inert, right?
Yeah.
Like compared to everything else that happened in the show, right?
Yeah, and I would have wanted to, like, if their ultimate point was like, hey, look, we made this spectacle of AI as, you know, people trying to sell AI often do, but actually it's really this insidious thing. I would have liked to have seen that matched in the filmmaking, but really it kind of just plays it very matter of fact, which it kind of undercut, I think, the message a little bit.
It was odd to me that it felt like the resolution derived its understanding of the technology from the 80s, like Terminator style. Like mm-hmm. in Terminator, James Cameron, you got to destroy the machine. Like it's a mm-hmm. physical thing in the real world, destroy it. And I'm like, Andy doesn't have like 18 backups of this, you know, somewhere else. Like is really destroying this one computer room going to solve the problem? You know, it's very weird to me that was the... So that was presented as a solution, unironically. I don't know.
And actually presented as like a revelation, because they were trying to hack him at one point. Yeah. They're like, actually, no, we can just destroy the servers, and they're like, open it up and see the whole room.
Right, and it's like, really? There's no, like, I thought, you know, where we get some post credit scene. Maybe there was, and I missed it, but I thought we'd get some post credit scene where like, you know, Andy's iPhone turns on and it's like the AI is still there or something. Maybe it was. I don't recall anything like that. Did you?
No, I don't think so either. Yeah.
The finale was the final scene was, guess what? She wrote another book, and this time people did come to the reading. You know, I mean, they came to the reading the first time, but slightly more people came to this one. Is kind of how it all ended
up. Slightly more readers.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, Jesse, isn't that all what we all want? I guess that's actually probably the most realistic part of the show. You can work your out. You can go through a massive ordeal in which three people die and write about it. And at the end of the day, all you can expect is 10 to 15% more people are interested in your work, right?
Feels, as a YouTuber, that feels all too real.
I'm way laughing to real. Keep from crying. So exactly. Anyway, any other thoughts on Murder at the End of the World season 1/finale? I don't think there'll be a season 2, but like finale of the show, anything we might have missed that's worth talking about?
I think the only other thing, just to briefly offhandedly mention, we didn't even talk about it, but the fact that like Zoomer, it turns out to be Bill's kid, is like a strange revelation that like even apparently Lee, Zoomer's mother, is like shocked by in the finale too. She's like surprised when that comes up and like weren't you the one having an affair with Bill? Like what was happening there? So yeah, it was it was very weird to me. So yeah, it was I guess it garners a mention in that it was sort of this big revelation. It doesn't seem to play too much into things, except for maybe informing Clive Owen's anger, but
yeah, why he might feel threatened, right?
By Bill.
But you know, I think the reveal, the way that Darby finds that out is probably classic, you know, Britt Marling's Albert Mangledge, you know, reveal, which is that Bill has a, now this is real. I looked this up. Mm-hmm. It's called, I literally thought they were making it up for the show. I was like, that's some goofy ass shit that they made up for the show, but it's literally a real thing. It's called Achu syndrome. Achu stands for autosomal dominant compelling heliophthalmic outburst.
Someone really tried to make that algorithm, or not the algorithm, that acronym work.
Where she finds out that, you know, Bill says, oh, I have Achu syndrome, you know, which is basically that they uncontrollably sneeze in response to sudden exposure to bright light, typically intense sunlight. That is an actual thing. And then you find out that Zoomer also has that. I mean, the kid is called Zoomer. You know, like, you kind of understand, what kind of show this is. But, yeah, that is such a goofy idea, you know? It's just
especially the way it's done, too. Like, she opens up the curtain, then the kid sneezes, and it's, like, the end of the episode. It's, like, that's the end revelation. It's, like, oh, God, he sneezed at light. It was quite comical.
There's this gif of that's very famous of Antonio Banderas in the movie Assassins, like leaning back and like really happy with himself. Are you familiar with this?
Yeah.
Gif? Right.
Yeah.
And whenever I see something like that, I feel like when the screenwriters discovered that there was something called Achu syndrome, they like leaned back really happily and were like, this is so beautiful. Like, this is the linchpin of the entire like penultimate episode is, you know, Darby discovering that this is actually Bill's kid. But it's such. It's so, like, that's the thing is, like, the show needs to kind of grind to a halt for a split second for Bill to explain what it is. Yeah, and then it's such a weird thing where, like, I think in an ideal mystery, you're looking back and you're like, oh, like, I didn't realize that was a clue the whole time. But when this show does it, it's like, oh, like, that's so out of the ordinary that I can't help but think that was like a weird moment. And now that you're like, that was the clue the whole time. Like, it's certainly good for remembering it, but it's not subtle. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. I mean, the better way to have done it would have been like have the kid sneezing the whole time and have it be like at the end of the season. That
right. That you're like, oh, and, like he's been sneezing.
Oh, he's sneezing the whole time. And I didn't catch it, even though it was explained in like episode 2.
Right. Right.
But it literally comes, the revelation comes in the same episode that we're told it. So it's just sort of like,
It's just like, you were clearly just setting that up for the, and you know, that's the show is not that subtle. You know, that's one of the things. Yeah. Like, the show's not that subtle, and I think on the way you could characterize it positively, it's just very earnest, right? It's a very, and I think they make very earnest work, and so like, and I don't wish to discourage that, but sometimes it does feel a little bit silly. So anyway, if there's nothing else, Jesse Earl, thank you so much for chatting with me about the show. Thanks to people who I had a couple of people reach out to me saying they enjoyed our coverage of the first two episodes and have been waiting to hear what we thought about this finale. So hope you all found that conversation to be somewhat enjoyable, even though neither of us really loved it. But there's some interesting stuff there. Jesse Earl, until next time, where can people find more of your work on the internet?
Well, they can find my movie that I just casually promoted earlier. I'm working on a movie that will be released later this year that'll be out on Nebula, so you can check that out. That's the streaming service that I and a bunch of other wonderful YouTubers are on. And then I'm also on YouTube under Jesse Gender if you want to see my video essay style of stuff. Secondary channel called Jesse Gender After Dark, where I do stuff more akin to what we do on this podcast, which is review TV shows and episodes and things like that. And then I'm on Twitter and all the social medias and all those things.
All right. I'm David Chen. She is Jesse Earl. And we hope to be bringing you more podcasts together in the year 2024. Stay tuned to Decoding TV. Lots more to come. Until next time, goodbye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.